Okay, thanks, David. I appreciate that. So, I'll get this thing kick-started off. And I do want to recognize Ignacio CMPD. Most everybody knows Ignacio. He's our cropping system specialist at Kansas State University. So him, myself, and his graduate student, Damaris Hansel, is doing a lot of work on double crop soybeans. So that being said, let's go ahead and get into this. And if you're going to talk about double crop beans, you need a first crop, right? And you need a first winter crop to plant double crop beans behind. And a major winter crop in the United States is winter wheat. And I don't know if you knew this or not, but Kansas is the breadbasket of the world. Self-proclaimed, right? And we self-proclaim a lot of things. North Dakota guys give me a bunch of grief about we're the sunflower state too, but we don't grow hardly any sunflowers. But we grow more winter wheat than any other state in the U.S. And so if you're going to start with double crops, you probably need to look at wheat country. And I pulled this map. It's a little old. It's 2013, but it kind of shows the distribution of winter wheat. I don't know if our pointer is going to work on the screen. But you can see Kansas has a pretty high percentage of winter wheat acres, followed by Oklahoma after that. Did you get it up? Okay, very good. Thanks.
You can see it.
As you get into Nebraska, of course, irrigation is going to predominate, and more soybean corn country in there. But there is a little bit of winter wheat, but mainly Kansas and Oklahoma are going to have the majority of the winter wheat. In the western part of the state, this was last year's number at 6.9 million acres for Kansas, but really with the wheat price being so depressed, it's actually going to drop to about 6 million acres this year. That almost is half of what it used to be. And so we're going to look at some of our acreage shifts here in a couple slides. Oklahoma grows quite a bit of winter wheat. They're at about 2.8 million acres. They plant more than that, but you can make more money grazing that out on the livestock system than you can taking it to grain. So that's harvested acres. Despite all of that, there's a lot of potential there. Now let's look at the soybean distribution. Now, Kansas is not a really big soybean producing state, but we're top 10. Okay, we're top 10 on harvested acres. So we battle it out with Arkansas. They're going to smoke us on production. So, but we're somewhere around 10th for harvested soybean acres in the U.S. Year in and year out. We're at 4.7 million acres now, or last year we're about 4.8 this year or so. So it keeps increasing. Oklahoma, on the other hand, is not a very big soybean producing state. They only grow, this is the highest soybean acres that they have grown, and they're at 500,000 acres. So they're a pretty minor player when it comes to planting soybeans. Pretty major on the wheat side, but kind of minor on a lot of our other crops as well. So let's kind of look at, so I'm going to focus a lot on Kansas. Of course, I am from Kansas, but I'll sprinkle in a little Oklahoma where I can, then I probably won't talk about Nebraska much. So if you look at our old acreage there in the yellow, this is 30 years ago. We were planting about 9 million acres of winter wheat. That was followed by sorghum. They were planting about 4 million acres of sorghum 30 years ago, and that has shifted quite a bit too. Corn and soybeans were kind of a minor crop or less important crop in Kansas. Now let's take a look at what's happened over the last 30 years. We've had a pretty dramatic shift. So our wheat acreage was 11 million acres at the peak, 11 point some million acres. And now, like I said, we're about down to 6 million acres this year. And economics is driving a lot of that. It's just really tough to make money on wheat. Our corn and our soybeans there in the blue and the red lines there just keep gradually increasing. Of course, I think a lot of that's genetics. The technology is going into corn and soybeans, and so it's becoming much more competitive yield-wise, but profitability-wise in Kansas. And it's kind of displacing some sorghum acres, too. We're growing sorghum hybrids that we grew like 15, 20 years ago. There hasn't just been a whole lot of influx in technology into sorghum. The other thing is this sugarcane aphid deal. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that on sorghum. It's been a real problem for our growers, and that's kind of discouraged them from planting more sorghum as well. So now our bean acres and our corn acres are approaching 5 million acres. So they're, if this trend keeps going, they're going to surpass wheat in the state of Kansas. Oklahoma, again, they've dropped their wheat acreage in about half over the last 30 years. Sorghum really hasn't changed a whole lot. Corn is, I don't know, what is that, quadrupled in numbers, but still they're at 300,000 acres, so they're not a big player on the corn side, neither on the soybean side. So if you're going to see an acreage increase in double crop, it's probably going to happen in Kansas. But we have some limitations when it comes to double crop soybean in Kansas. One of those is the length of our growing season. So I have the last frost-free date on the top map of Kansas. The bottom one is that's the last freeze in the spring. The top date is the last freeze in the fall. Okay, so this essentially lays out what the length of our growing season is. In the northwest part of the state, we're going to have a lot of difficulty growing soybean in this part of the state because that freeze happens about October 5th. In the southeast part of the state, which is where I'm at, I cover southeast Kansas. That's where the predominant double crop soybean acreage is. I gain like a month of growing season on the back end for them. On the front end, it's about another month. So our last freeze in southeast Kansas is about April 5th, where theirs is going to be about the first week of May. So that growing season, of course, everybody knows is really huge for double crop. It's going to be really tough to get a lot of double crop acres expanded out west when we're almost shaving 2 months off the growing season. We will harvest our winter wheat in the southeast part of the state about the first week of June. In the northwest part of the state, they're going about July 1st. Okay, so there's about a month's difference there on planting date, which is going to be huge. A lot of that is because of altitude. The lowest level of altitude is in southeast Kansas at about 650 feet. Has anybody ever been to Mount Sunflower? That's in Kansas. It's not a mountain. It's a big hill is what it is, about a half a mile from Colorado. But that's our highest point at about 4,000 feet above sea level. So, you know, the heat units that you get throughout the growing season are going to affect double crop beans as well. So you can almost draw a line almost about half. You get a wider spread in the southern. As you move further north in latitude, that growing season is going to be compressed a little bit. So let's just look to the eastern side of the state. The other big issue for us is moisture as well. That's probably the biggest driver of double crop soybeans, is that every 17 miles you move from western Kansas to eastern Kansas, you gain an inch of precipitation a year. So every 17 miles, so you get about 2 to 3 inches of variation across each county, essentially. So in our far western part of the state, we have a research station out here at Tribune. They get about 16, 17, 18 inches of precipitation a year. So they're kind of their dry land's going to be a wheat fallow type system where they have to store moisture up over a couple years. In southeast Kansas, in Pittsburgh, is about our highest precipitation at, it might approach 48 inches, so about three times the amount of precipitation in that corner versus western Kansas. And that really is a big limiting factor when it comes to double crop, in addition to the growing season. So despite all of those limitations, let's take a look at what our percentage of double crop soybeans are in Kansas. This is for the last 30 years. Now, from what I could find, about the only estimation the USDA gives is in their June acreage report. That's just an estimation. They released that the last couple days of June. So to stay kind of consistent in the reporting, let's take a look at that. Really, our increase in soybean acres, in double crop soybean acres, has kind of happened over the last 15 years. But you remember that previous graph, our growers are just getting more familiar with growing soybeans in general. So as total soybean acres go up, our double crop acres are going up as well. The numbers above that are the actual percentage of our total soybean acres. So on a statewide level in Kansas, it might be about 10% of our acres are as double crop. Okay, and that's mainly going to happen in that southeast region. The only reason to grow wheat in southeast Kansas, it's not economics, but they jokingly say it's to prevent them from planting their beans too early. Their double crop, there's T yields in the counties that their double crop average county yields are higher than the full season average. We have low water holding capacity. It's hot. They try to plant beans a little bit later so you can keep the beans kind of small through the heat and the drought of the summer. But the big spike in acreage is going through mostly the central part of the state and a little bit kind of north central. It's creeping a little bit into the northwest part of the state. But on average, we're about 10%. Oklahoma hasn't changed a whole lot in their actually, they grow a higher percentage of double crop. Remember, they're only growing about 500,000 acres. Their double crop has kind of averaged about 160,000 acres over the last 10 years. It really hasn't, the total acres haven't increased a whole lot of double crop, but they do grow significantly more double crop than Kansas does on a percentage basis. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the research out there and that has been done in Kansas because, you know, we're going to maybe try to increase the management, and that was the help of USB grant that we were all sort of involved with the last couple years. We dove through some of the old research on double crop to see what we had done in Kansas. Hadn't done a whole lot of double crop research. It was, remember, it's only about 10% of our soybean acres. But in Kansas, there's a pretty big movement to do cover crops. And I always think, well, why in the world are we doing cover crops when we can just plant a double crop soybean out there? If it rains, fantastic. Let's harvest that and let's get some income for the farm. If it dies or is not harvestable, then, you know, you've created some biomass and you have a summer legume out there. Craig Rosenboom is a researcher on campus. He has some long-term research. I say long-term. He has 6, 7, 8 years of research done on a cover crop system behind wheat, where he includes double crop soybeans into that system, and then he measures the sorghum yields the following year in his rotation. Double crop soybeans are right there at that kind of pale green line right towards the top. So to me, over 6, 7 years of data, double crop sorghum performs as good or better than most of our cover crops after double crop beans than they do most of our cover crops. And so I think that's a pretty viable option for producers that I think they need to take a look at. Okay, of course, planting date is huge on double crop soybeans. We talked about that in Kansas. Why? Because of our compressed growing season. And we haven't specifically done a lot of double crop planting date research. We've just been doing a lot of just overall full season bean planting date research, and we plant pretty late. So you can make some assumptions here from this data. Now, this is a research station in East Central Kansas, kind of on the upper end, the fringe of our double crop, traditional double crop acreage. And as you would expect, the later planting you get here, once we get about past June 1, then our yields really start to tail off. You guys would expect to see that from a later planting date. And so I would expect this pattern after most of the part of the state. The one difficult region in Kansas is southeast Kansas, where that doesn't always hold true. Remember, we have almost 2 more months of growing season, and planting date is not quite as clean cut as this graph over here on the left. With Parsons, you could, depending on the variety, and really we depend on August and September rainfall. And if we can catch rains, depending on the timing of August and September rainfall, we can plant as late as first, second week of July with the right maturity at that particular year, and we can still have excellent double crop soybean yields. So for the most part of the state, really you want to follow that planter behind the combine to get it in as soon as you can. In the southeast part of the state, they're not quite as rushed because they have 3 or 4 weeks to get their double crop planted. Some additional research, past research that's been done in Kansas on double crop soybean, we have found that no-till double crop beans work better than tillage, and that only stands to reason. One is it's excellent because you can get everything done in a timely fashion, it's cheaper, but that residue really helps us. We don't like residue in the southeast part of the state for corn. It cools the soil. It keeps it a little bit more moist. Our tillage corn outperforms our no-till corn in southeast Kansas. But for beans, it's the opposite. We want that residue there during the summer to hold moisture, cool that soil down, and our double crop beans tend to do a little bit better in no-till situations. Rotational penalties, when we have a gamut of crop rotations, we'll see 2 to 4 bushel yield loss when beans are in consecutive years. So just had producers think that they can throw a wheat in between their bean years as and double crop the soybeans, but you're still going to see yield penalties from that. At least we've seen that in our rotational work. And then finally, we can get some nitrogen credits from our double crop soybeans when you credit that towards a corn crop or a sorghum crop the next year, in the order of about 20 or 30 bushels, pounds rather, sorry. So I'll kind of throw out some of our general university recommendations in Kansas for double crop soybean. One is get it planted as soon as possible outside of that little corner in the southeast part of the state. And I can't say that this is really wide used, but harvesting high moisture wheat, producers are listening to that, where maybe you can harvest it at 15-16% moisture and gain probably 3 days on a double crop soybean planting. That's not really being widely used yet, just some producers are starting to toy with that. The other thought process is growing an earlier maturing wheat, and that can work. In Kansas, though, you know, we have different varieties of differing maturity dates, but really they're kind of compressed in about 3 to 5 days on the maturity side. We get hot and dry winds in the summer, and it really matures everything down pretty fast. Now, the one exception to that would be growers in the southeast part of the state. Some of them do grow soft wheat, and that will mature about a week later than what our hard wheat does. And so if you are going to pick and choose earlier maturing wheat, our producer might just pick a hard wheat instead of a soft wheat in that part of the state. Now, an alternative crop that you could possibly get earlier planting, there is a little bit more winter canola going in Kansas. It's more in the southern, south-central part of the state, and we don't have any research on double crop beans behind canola versus wheat. I see a lot of advantages to it, but some of the bigger producers that do grow winter canola, they kind of tend to favor planting double crop behind wheat instead of canola. In that part of the state, moisture is a concern. He has tended to see higher double crop bean yields behind wheat for that moisture reason. That keeps the soil a little bit cooler with that residue and conserves a little bit more moisture in his mind. I can't disagree with him. With the canola, there's just really no residue behind there, and it's a little tougher environment for a bean going through the summer in south central Kansas. So our additional recommendations besides planting early are no-till, of course. We just talked about that, time and moisture savings. We recommend narrower rows and higher seeding densities. And, of course, that would be of the mindset that we have a compressed growing season, so we're trying to get as many nodes out there. We're trying to get as much leaf area coverage as possible. And so increasing our seeding density, decreasing our row spacing has been a recommendation of ours. Of course, we also always talk to producers about budgeting for their nutrient removal. You're starting to grow three crops in 2 years now, so we're removing significantly more nutrients out of that system. Make sure you budget for that. Some of our latest, one of the biggest issues for double crop for our producers has been pigweed control. Our glyphosate-resistant pigweed is just common everywhere now. That's been a big issue for our growers planting double crop beans. And some of our graduate research that has come out of the university has been focusing on quick burn downs right after planting. We've kind of really found paraquat to work the best. People are very concerned with that from a health standpoint. Also, drift in Kansas is just insane, and that'll go a mile and you'll see it on corn and sorghum. And then followed by the dicamba system with extend beans that has worked fairly well in our state as well. So we've had some pretty good results, but it has to include a residual. So that's kind of been our take-home message. So those are kind of our university recommendations, and it was with the help of USB and kind of this group that got everything started, and we thought, well, we better validate some of those recommendations with some actual field research. So that's where Damaris and Ignacio and I have come together and started to look at some double crop soybean management practices. And with that kitchen sink approach, and I think a fair amount of the folks in the room have seen kind of this structure on double crop beans. And we were looking mainly at seeding density, row spacing, additional fertility, also some fungicide and insecticide applications as well, and trying to see which one of these management practices has the best overall impact on our double crop soybean. So several research sites were set up in Kansas, one in Oklahoma, and a lot of data was being collected on that as well. So as far as the planting date aspect of this goes, and these are just side-by-side studies. It's really not a lot you can do direct comparisons from, but in side-by-side identical studies planted 8 days apart, we saw in Manhattan a significant yield increase by planting early. Now, that's a region that's a little bit further north in the state. Growing season is going to be compressed, so we saw a nice yield bump at that location. The further south locations, that last year the growing season was so long we didn't see that advantage from planting early. That kind of makes sense with how late the growing season was. So what about the individual treatments of the Kinchin sink approach? And we saw kind of a wide gamut of responses, and it really depended on the location. So some locations we were seeing a increase in seeding density response. Some were not. Some of them we were seeing a row spacing response, and some we did not see that. But what we did tend to see was that when you compare the common practice, which is wide rows, no seed treatment, no added fertility, normal seeding density, versus that kitchen sink approach, the kitchen sink always was in the top yield group, and the common practice was always the lowest one. So I think the real take-home message here is that we can influence management, we can better manage our double crop, we can increase yields and profitability of our growers in this system. In summary, there is a lot of ability to expand our double crop plantings in the High Plains region. Of course, we're going to be kind of bound by some of those environmental conditions that are unfavorable in Kansas. So mainly moisture, but compressed growing season is also going to be an issue. And I think from some of the latest research, we have a pretty good understanding of what the best management practices are for growers for double crop in our region. But, through some of this latest research that Damaris and Ignacio and myself are doing, we can see that we can improve better profitability with some better management as well. So,
okay.
With that, I will shut her down and take questions.
We have 5 minutes. You're
okay.
Right on time. So we got 5 minutes for questions, but maybe you ought to give him 4 because Jeremy's next.
Hey, Doug, what would have to be the target planted date in northeast Kansas for soybeans in a double crop scenario?
Well, it's always earlier is better. Okay, so
from a wheat scenario, what would be it?
The earliest, okay, so I will say this. I farm in the east central part of the state, and we cut wheat on June 12th this year, and I utilized the high moisture. We were cutting 16% moisture wheat. I gained 8 or 9 days on my double crop compared to what my latest cutting was. Realistically, in northeast Kansas, first of all, we don't grow wheat in northeast Kansas. They're called Little Iowa. They have glacial till soil, so all they grow is beans and corn up there. But theoretically, if you did put wheat up there, I would think June 20th, unless we get big shifts in our climate, June 20th is going to be about the earliest you're going to get in on wheat in northeast Kansas, 15th to 20th maybe, depending on the year.
We still have time, or are there other questions?
What was that high density? What was that?
We went, our normal seeding rate was 140,000 seeds. Our high density was 180,000. So we tried to bump it up a fair amount more. So, and we saw a response at one location, not at the other two, to the high seeding rate.
How did elevators feel about taking time?
I'm sorry? So we threw ours in the bin. I talked to a guy in southeast Kansas. He has a dryer. And so he's kind of done it. He does soft wheat and a little bit of hard wheat, but he's actively drying it. He'll start as early as 20-22%. Our elevators don't want high moisture wheat. I mean, they'll probably accept 14% just to get started, but because they know they got a bunch of dry stuff coming behind it. But unlike the Mid-Atlantic, you say they wanted some high moisture wheat. They
well,
do not want that in Kansas.
We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
And generally, that's not the case.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask you, what type of dryers are they using, these farmers, to dry the wheat down?
I don't know. I don't have one, so I don't know. But we just have fans. But, it's probably propane. There's some natural gas dryers around, too.
I've always heard batch dryers don't work. Grain dryers don't work unless you layer the grain and have start moving grain between five.
It.
It's very hard. That's why I thought Kansas would know more than I would about it.
I don't. We're a little bit different, too, because we have lower humidity than you guys do, too. So maybe it's not as hard to dry stuff down. I don't know.
So
that's a good question.
You're saying your double crop grain is 180 pounds?
Seeds per acre.
So what about
Our full season rates, I'm going to recommend 140,000 seeds per acre. We've always kind of said, without a whole lot of data backing it up, you might bump your seeding rate up 10% with the theory that I want more plants, I want more nodes because I have a compressed season out there.
We've got time for one more. Doug has to leave and go to another session, so I'm gonna, does anyone else have one more burning question? If not, let's thank Doug for his presentation.
Very good, thanks.